and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network. It is UNC week here for the Virginia Cavaliers, coming off five straight wins. And they have got Bill Belichick, Jordan Hudson, and the Fighting Chapel Bills on Saturday down in Chapel Hill. And it's a little bit of a revenge game, not for the Cavaliers from their loss last year, but more so for my guest. He's a UVA alum, works at Barstool now, Jake Malasek. Now, Jake, last time I had you on here, it seems like it wasn't that long ago, but it was a year ago, and you were going to Charlottesville for the UNC game. It was your first appearance, and UNC throttled UVA 41-14. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Hoping we have some better luck this time around for UNC week than last year. And it's been crazy that it's been a year. I feel like it's been 2 weeks since I was on the show last. So thank you again for having me.
Yeah, man, it's always good to catch up. You are always a vibrant part of the social media atmosphere around UVA football, especially this year. But let's start off with just a little bit of a vibe check, man, because we were talking about it before we got on here. Like, so much has happened since the last time you were on here. I think Tony Bennett had just retired as UVA men's basketball coach. Brian O'Connor was the head coach of UVA baseball, but more importantly for football, they had just come off that blowout against UNC, and things just, you know, didn't look like they were clicking down the stretch. And obviously Virginia eventually goes on to miss a bowl game. But since then, 6-1 for the first time since 2007, they're bowl eligible for the first time under Tony Elliott. And they're one of three teams unbeaten in ACC play. It's a pretty good time for UVA football fans.
Yeah. The vibes have never shot up quite like I think they've shot up this season. To your point, like after the UNC game and then the rest of the season last year, and especially with the VT game last year, like I really thought, I'm sorry about this. I really thought like Elliott and his staff kind of had like one last chance this year, especially with the kind of being their first real shot with their guys to really make their mark at UVA. And this has gone better than I possibly could have imagined, which for me to say that about Virginia football, I'm still thinking like this is not entirely real. The way that this football season has gone, I can only describe as ideal, which again is a word I never thought I would use talking about this program. I'm having so much fun, and I don't really know when it's going to come crashing and burning, which I assume eventually at some point, like in reality, we're not winning a national championship. So like, at what point does it end? I will be riding this ride until the wheels fall off. I'm having the time of my life.
Yeah, it's just like you got to just enjoy it. I mean, the close 100%. Games, you know, five straight now. They're bowl eligible, which I know a lot of the, you know, the players and coaches, yeah, sure, it's their job to like kind of, you know, they got bigger goals towards the end of the season. But like for fans, like it's been a few years since 2021 when they were last bowl eligible, and they haven't even played in a bowl game since kind of the peak of UVA football in this, you know, century, you know, since 2000, going to the Orange Bowl and in 2019. So like it's been a while since they've really had something to enjoy out there on the field. And, you know, I want to talk about just kind of the close wins the last couple of weeks. You know, obviously double overtime against Florida State, that was its own thing. Then the next week, overtime at Louisville, a huge game for this, you know, for this team to win that game. That was probably the toughest game I had on their schedule entering this. And then last week, Washington State doesn't get the credit that they probably deserve because they've now taken two ranked teams to the brink in back-to-back weeks. But to win that on a safety, which I, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen that before. I'd never seen it before. It's just been, you know, what is going on with these close wins?
Yeah, I think, again, to the point of the program, like they've sort of turned a corner where the past couple of years, this team never wins the close games. And I mean, you go back, I guess there was the win at UNC a couple of years ago. That was like a, you know, shot in the dark close game win. And last year at Pitt, one of those, you know, close game wins. But for the most part, this team and this staff never really won the close games. It was always like, oh, yeah, we were in it. And ultimately, we would lose. So the fact that now this season, every single time, barring the NC State game, that there's been some sort of pressure moment at the end of the game that it's kind of gone UVA's way, speaks a lot to, I think, the preparation of the team, the coaching staff, and how they've been able to handle it at halftime. I think all three of the games that we've played, the halftime speeches, especially if you go watch the game recaps that the team has been putting out, like They give you an inside look into Tony Elliott's halftime speech against Florida State. And he walks in there, and it's a big confidence boost, I think, to the entire program and to the team and the staff of, you guys know you're the better team, which for the past couple of years, I don't think they've been able to say. And if they've said it, I don't think they've believed it. I think they're finally believing that they have the team and the guys and the prep and the practice and the reps to compete with the programs that they're competing with. So I give them all the credit in the world. They deserve it. But I think this has been a huge couple games to really turn a corner and have UVA football sort of arrive and say, hey, we're here to compete for an ACC championship and a college football playoff spot.
Yeah, it's kind of incredible, just kind of the stretch that they've had, as of late. And I want to get your thoughts, because this is a big topic around the fan base, and even for us in the media, is just, how much do you talk about the ACC championship or college football playoff talk right now? So I'll give the numbers real quick. They have the third best odds to win the ACC according to ESPN's College Football Power Index, and they're one of 22 teams with at least a 15% shot at the college football playoff. I know you're sharing graphics of UVA on that 12-team bracket, but how much do you get bought up into that?
I am going to say, hopefully, the team zero and me 100. Again, I think I tweeted this out yesterday. Like, I'm going to do it as much as possible because I don't know when I'll ever get to do it again. So,
Right.
anytime I see a bracket with this college football playoff logo on it and the UVA logo on it, I'm going to say, that's us, UVA football, college football playoff conversation. Because, again, we don't really get this. And it's kind of, they always say, act like you've been there before. I have never been there before. And when it's the basketball season and I was at school, we were the number one seed in the country. I was constantly saying, don't overlook, don't overlook, don't overlook, yada, 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 because we really were supposed to be there. This team is not supposed to be there.
Yeah.
So I give, again, give them a lot of credit, but I'm going to enjoy it. I hope that they are very focused on UNC and they have the horse blinders on and that's all they're looking at is UNC. But for me as a fan with no tie to the program whatsoever, I'm going to take this time to talk as much propaganda and look ahead as far as possible every chance I get. Because if this goes away in 2 weeks, I will have enjoyed my potential playoff spot and my potential ACC championship game for as long as I possibly could have.
Yeah, see, I think that's the healthy way to look at it, because you're not on the team. You don't have It's not rat poison for you. You're just enjoying the ride. That's what being a fan is all about. So I've heard some different sides of the coin on that one, from different fans, and some like to avoid all of it, like they are on the team, and they have to, they can't buy into that, and some are just along for the ride like you. And I think that's kind of a healthy way of looking at it. I know you're going to say, Chandler Morris and Cam Robinson, but what players are you falling in love with on this team this year? Because there's a lot of new players, and I think one of the things going into this year with so many new players, a big part of this new era of college football is, like, are the fans going to connect with these guys? If they're only there for 1 year, everyone likes to use the term mercenaries. But are there guys that you have, like, I love this guy, I love watching him play. Who have you hooked on to?
Yeah, I'll tell you, my star of the show this season has been, I don't even know how to pronounce this exactly. I always get a different pronunciation from the different broadcasters, but Jason Prevard, if that's how you say
Jason,
that.
Jason Brevard,
Whatever, Jason Prevard, whatever, however you say it, he is a certified stud. Everywhere I look on the defensive side of the ball, he is somehow right in the mix. Those two picks against Florida State, the one pick against Washington State, he seems to be everywhere. Flying around. You can always kind of tell because the hair's bouncing around. I think he's my favorite player on the team. I love his attitude. I love his swagger. I love his moxie. He's made big play after big play after big play. So he's my number one guy, I think, on the entire team. You could take out Morris. You can take out Cam Robinson. I think so far this season, I love Privard more than anybody else. I also have been loving the emergence of Jamal Edrin,
Yeah.
right? I think that he had a huge game against Washington State. I think a big thing that this team has sort of figured out is the sort of next man up mentality, where, a Dakota Twitty goes down and John Rogers makes a big play in overtime against Louisville. You have Cam Roscoe down and Jamal Edrin steps up against Washington State. Like, different guys have made big plays and big moments for this team, which I think has been a really big part of why they've been so successful. Where you're not really, you lose a guy in the game's like, oh, like our plan's kind of out. Like, different guys have made huge different impacts in different games. Trell Harris, for example, was the Stanford hero. He had three touchdowns. And then, the game before that, Cam Ross lit it up for three touchdowns, whatever it was. But each game, I think, has been a player of the game. Brevard's been one of those guys that's been super consistent for me. I think he's been unbelievable. And then on the line, Ben York stepping up in big moments.
Yeah.
I tackle. I think that's been huge. I know we're getting Brady Wilson back. I'm pretty sure, right, for
Yeah.
Saturday.
Yeah, he'll be
Seeing
back
one of them
Saturday.
serving, he's not playing, so he should be back for Saturday's game. But yeah, the guys that have filled in on the offensive line have done a great job. And overall, that guy stepping up into a role they previously didn't have, either a play ago or a game ago, has made a big difference for these guys.
I'm glad you brought up the depth chart. This is my PSA to fans about the depth chart, and it's why I don't post the depth chart every week, is it rarely changes. And if it does change, it's probably a change that happened like 3 weeks ago, and they're just now putting on the depth chart. So just because a Brady Wilson or a Noah Vaughn or whoever it may be is on the depth chart doesn't mean they're playing. Like
Right.
that's the coaches barely, I don't even know if they check it week by week. I think they're just like, yeah, just copy and paste the same thing from last week. It's yeah. Don't pay attention to the depth chart. I'm glad you brought up Jamal Edgerrin. He was my under the radar guy heading into the season. I like that pick still right now, because I knew at some point, like he had a really good connection in fall camp with Chandler Morris. He's like, I was watching, unfortunately, I was watching my Falcons lose to the 49ers on Sunday Night Football, but Juwan Jennings for the 49ers, they had that thing third and one and third and Juwan. Like that's what Jamal Edgerrin's like. He's a big time blocker and he makes the clutch catches. That's what, the Cavaliers have kind of gotten out of him. Love the Brevard pick though, because yeah, I just talked about him on the podcast earlier this week. The blitz is off the edge for him as a DB. Like he times those so well. He's a really exciting player to watch on kind of in the secondary over there. All right.
That play he made in Florida State, by the way, where he batted the ball to himself. I mean, A, I think that was the play of the game. I know he picked it off in overtime to win the game, but I think that that was the turning point of the game. And it was one of the most insane plays I've ever seen a DB make, college or pro. So I give him a lot of credit for stepping up this season. I know he barely played college football before this, which is crazy. Guy, that's good. But he is
Didn't play that position before.
right. Like he's been by far and away my guy of the year. Like if I had an award and said player of the year, it's him, like bar none.
The Malisak Player of the Year award so far.
He's earned it for sure.
Now, a lot has changed, like we mentioned earlier. You also have moved in the last year, and now you are working closely with the man everyone knows, and Jon Gruden, former NFL head coach. So I want you to put on your Gruden cap here, your visor, if you will, and let's break down some quarterback play here in Chandler Morris. How would you break down his game right now? Tony Elliott likes to call him a warrior. I think that's a very fitting term, but he's just a guy that's gotten it done in the big moments this year.
Yeah, 100%. I think also like the past couple games, he hasn't really played that well, which is crazy because we've been having a quarterback, which his ceiling, I believe, is very, very high, who's been kind of playing at a mediocre level for his standard, and we've still been pulling out the win. So I think it's, again, huge credit to the coaching staff and the surrounding cast. You watch him play against Stanford. I thought it was one of the most complete games a quarterback's ever had. I know the Florida State game, obviously, was awesome. He had three rushing touchdowns and really was in control of the game. What I love about Morris is he's never frazzled. He's never sort of freaking out. The hands don't shake when he's looking for the snap. Like he is in control. It's his fourth school. He's been around the block. That's why I kind of like having an older guy under center. But he, to me, is a guy that whether he's playing at his best or not, is going to make sure that the guys around him know what's going on, know what to do, and are secure that the quarterback is going to do the right things. There have been multiple times in the past couple of games I can envision, I don't know if it was a deep cross or a post or whatever it is against Louisville, where he missed Edgerrin, where I thought that's usually how UVA loses the football game. It was an overthrow or a walk-in touchdown, all-out blitz. I think we had to punt right after. And I usually think, okay, that's how we lose. And he steers the ship, doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. So I give Chandler Morris a lot of credit for being sort of the even keel sort of measuring stick for this team, whether he's balling out or whether he's kind of behind the chains a little bit. In terms of his actual play style, I love it. I give him a lot of Baker Mayfield comp on Twitter, where I think he's got a lot of moxie. He can move really, really well, and he lets it fly. He's like a little Brett Favre in him, where he's like, "I got a guy downfield. I know I can make that throw." Gruden loves to tell me this quote from Brett Favre. He goes, "There's a cover two. Brett Favre sees a guy streaking down, and you're not supposed to throw it in between the corner and the safety. And Brett Favre fires it in there." And he comes over to the sideline and Gruden goes, "Hey, like, why'd you throw that ball? You're not supposed to throw that ball. Why'd you throw it?" And Brett Favre goes, "Because I can." So that's, I think, a little bit of Chandler Morris. He's making these throws because he knows that he can. So I
Yeah.
love him. Obviously, he's my quarterback on this team. And as long as he stays healthy, I think we got a really good shot at doing a lot of great things.
You pop the tape on for Gruden this year, like look at this route that Morris threw.
I have done so much Chandler Morris propaganda in our office day in and day out. Oh, it's the best. And we have a guy, Ron Zook, who coached at
Yeah.
Florida, and college football legend. And I've been getting him on the Chandler Morris train as well. So I got two former coaching legends that are now hooked on Chandler Morris week in and week out.
So you, I'm gonna go recent quarterbacks here. I want you to rank in order of confidence. You got, final drive of the game, and you gotta win this. So you got Chandler Morris, Anthony Calandria, Tony Muskett, Brennan Armstrong, Bryce Perkins. One drive to win the game. Who you putting out there?
So I've said this for a long, long time, and I genuinely think that this is a true fact. 2021 Brennan Armstrong might be a top five college quarterback to ever play the game. There was a time where Brennan Armstrong would drop back and he would wind up to throw, and there was zero doubt in my mind that that ball was getting completed. Every single ball that he threw, I thought was an automatic completion. He was throwing the ball like I've never seen anybody throw it. So I think if you give me 2021 Brennan Armstrong, I take him over pretty much anybody that's ever played football in college in the history of the sport.
Okay.
In terms of clutchness and history and the whole thing and results, I would have to, I'm going to take Chandler Morris out of this until the end of the season. I'm going to leave him
That's
off the
fair.
list.
That's fair.
I'm going to give him till the end of the year because, again, things could go completely wrong and whatever. But at the moment, he's doing great. Let's put him on the side. I'm going to go.
See, that's you avoiding the rat poison, though.
Correct. Let's let him focus on UNC and we'll get the rest of the guys ranked. I'll take Armstrong one if you give him the Robert and I offense and 2021 vision. I thought he, again, was unbelievable. I'll take Perkins at two. I gotta give my guy Anthony Calandria the three spot, and then I'll throw Tony Muskett in the four just because I think he got a bad deal at UVA,
Yeah.
but didn't get to play a ton. I know he won the UNC game, which was awesome. A couple of years ago, but just for lack of exposure and lack of reps, I'll put him in the four spot.
While we're on it, any thoughts on UNLV AC right now? I know that's your guy.
Yeah, he is my guy. I still talk to him a lot. He was down in the FFCA down here in Tampa a couple of months ago, talking about prepping for the next season and how he's going to train over the spring. So I've been in contact with him. I think they're playing great. I think he's really found a spot that's great for him. The Boise game, they obviously lost by a couple scores, but he was playing very, very well. He's making some good
Yeah.
throws. He's moving around. So I love what him and Coach Mullen at UNLV are doing. And I'm very happy that it's worked out for both sides because we got a great guy in Chandler Morris and UNLV got their guy in Calandria. So, all the power to him. I hope it works out for him and they compete for a Mountain West championship.
I know Tech fans have kind of moved on to the James Franklin dream right now, but there was a while where Dan Mullen was the number one guy. Any fear of seeing Anthony
Yeah.
Calandria on the other side?
That would have been an all-time disaster for me. So I'm very glad that Dan Mullen came on Twitter the other day and said, "I have 0.0% interest in these jobs, but you got to hire this guy." I was like, "Thank you very much, Dan Mullen. Stay in Vegas and keep my boy happy and healthy."
There you go. The other big Chandler Morris thing, and this is going to kind of get us into our UNC preview here, is there was a story in The Athletic a few weeks ago about Bill Belichick and Mike Lombardi and everything that's going on at UNC Chapel Hill. And the start of the story, kind of weird and interesting that they started this way, but I guess it was a good story to kind of outline some of the issues in their mind. Was that Chandler Morris, when he got into the transfer portal, and 2 days later, that's when Bill Belichick was hired, was really interested in the UNC and going to UNC. The story said that Mike Lombardi, had some talks with the agent, didn't want him. And his quote was, "You just don't understand what it takes to play in the National Football League." Obviously, everyone had a field day with that. But then, this week, Belichick and Lombardi said they did talk with Morris's agent, but never directly to Morris, and kind of Belichick dismissed all that. Morris said he never talked with UNC and was surprised by it, and actually it was his teammate Noah Josi that sent him the story in the first place. Just a little, side note going into this UNC UVA game, the 130th South's oldest rivalry.
Yeah, also The Athletic, when they posted the story originally, the title had Bill Belichick said this to Chandler Morris, and they retracted and changed it to Mike
Yeah.
Lombardi. So I'm going to give that story almost zero weight the entire time. I believe Chandler Morris, unless he's doing the greatest gotcha of all time with UNC, basically being like, yeah, I don't think about you at all, which would be hilarious. But I think he's telling the truth that this never really happened. I don't know how that story gets out, but it seems like the biggest made up nothing of all time from The Athletic, which is kind of a weird thing because they're a pretty reputable, like
Yeah.
good source for a lot of this stuff. So it's kind of weird that they would put something out that just has zero actual weight behind it.
Yeah, no, and I know a lot of people that work there, and I know someone that was, an author in that article, and it was kind of surprising because I get the notification and it's talking about Chandler Morris, and I thought it was like a UVA story, so I went to read it and then find it's like a big Bill Belichick, Mike Lombardi story, which is interesting. All right, let's get into this one. 130th meeting of the South's oldest rivalry. Obviously, it is the South's oldest rivalry. Don't come at me with your Georgia and Auburn and everything else. That's the Deep South.
Deep South, deep south.
Your impressions of this Bill Belichick debut season. They're 2-4, still haven't beaten a Power Four opponent. They get close last week at Cal, but still searching for that first one.
Yeah, and Cal's a tough spot to win right now. So I give them a lot of credit for hanging in there. They had some unforced, or unfortunate turnovers in that game, first drive and the last drive. It's a very new team. I think people have not really taken a lot of stock in that. Like almost the entire team is brand new guys with a brand new staff. So I'm not terribly shocked that things haven't gone great to start out. That first drive against TCU that I watched on my TV, I thought, oh my God, UNC's gonna win the national championship. They look so good. And then from then on, they've looked like one of the worst teams in college football history. It's to me, I know we're 10 and a half point favorites. It's to me like, you can't play down or you can't play distracted with these
Yeah.
games. That seems to be more of a worry for me with the games like this than it is like the Louisvilles and the Florida States. It's the same thing with Washington State, I think. Like coming off a bye, you're kind of maybe looking ahead at UNC or different, you're looking at the ACC standings and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, Washington State punches you in the face and you're down 10 going into the fourth. So I think that that's going to help out for this game. The UNC is still a very like, decent football team, I think. Like they have guys. I know Gio Lopez is a great quarterback. Like he can get you. So this is not a game just because they've looked pretty bad and they haven't beaten a P4 team, et cetera, that you can take lightly. So I think that they know that, especially after their little snafu against Washington State last week. I am pretty confident going into the game. I also love that it's a noon kick. I hope all of our games are noon kicks from now on, here on out. No nighttime crazy. Like if we could play Cal at Cal at 10 in the morning, I would take that every single time. I want zero night games, zero drama, zero everybody's watching. I want all of our games to be on this on like ACC network with no crowd, with daylight, everything. So I'm glad that UNC's at noon. I don't think there'll be a ton of talk about this game. I hope it's a pretty easily well-handled game and we move on to the next week.
I hate to break it with you. If they keep winning, you're not going to get many noon kickoffs the rest of the way. I think this UNC game team, I think, looked better last week. I think they've improved. I think they can still do some stuff defensively to slow you down with this offense right now for UVA that's kind of been, stuttering the last two games against Louisville and Washington State, which I think have probably better defenses than UNC, but still, like if UNC can, get some stops, who knows? Virginia hasn't turned the ball over much this year, so that's not a huge concern. Morris has made a couple of interceptions at Florida State and but really and the one at NC State obviously that people remember, but overall they're just not a team that turns the ball over that much. So I guess there's not much to worry there, but you don't want to be the get right game for UNC. And what do we remember from a couple of years ago in 2023? You had a highly ranked UNC team with a Virginia team that needed a get right game. And, we saw it there. Virginia upset UNC. So you don't want to be that one for UNC this year and for Bill Belichick. You don't want to be Bill Belichick's first Power Four win. So I don't think this Virginia team's one that looks too far ahead. I know some people said that last week. I think Washington State's just a better team, and it was a UVA team coming off the bye week and trying to, snap back in the structure. It's very promising that Brady Wilson's coming back, so hopefully that kind of helps out the offensive line and some of the issues they've been going through. So, just you don't want to be the get right game. So prediction time. I mentioned it before. Really, a big line on the road. 10.5 point favorite for UVA. On the road. Last week, I said that the 16.5 points that they had at home over Washington State, I thought that was way too much.
Crazy.
10.5 is on the verge of being too much, but prediction
It's
time does.
way too much. It's way too
Does,
much.
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, I am a gambling man. I don't like to gamble anymore in Florida because I can't use the DraftKings sportsbook down here. But I'm a gambling guy. I'm betting on UNC to cover. I think that it's a rivalry game. I think that it's two ACC team. Like 10.5 points as a road favorite is way too many points.
Yeah.
Now, whether we win by 10 or not, sure. I think that's still you're covering with that 10.5. But this could easily be a touchdown game, I think, and it still could be a game that UVA dominates and ends up being a 7-point win. But I see this being relatively close throughout the entire game. I don't think UVA at the moment is a team that really blows people out of the water. They haven't been really all year besides the Stanford game. The only thing that really gives me a lot of solace is two things, which is one, after we lost to NC State, they played like really kind of possessed and like focused and ready to rock for a couple weeks up until the bye. And I think that that Washington State game last week is going to sort of be another reset for this team for the next couple of weeks to be like, all right, we got to kind of hone in and lock in, and our rankings and all that really don't matter. And also watching the Cal game last week, I know it was pretty close, but like Cal had a pretty bad case of the drops that entire
They did.
game. So hopefully, if the UVA offense isn't doing that, then it should be a little less close. But yeah, I think it'll be 10 or less for sure. So if you're a gambling person out there listening to this, I would take UNC as much as it pains me to say. I'd love to see UVA blow them out. I just don't really see that happening. But yeah, I still think UVA wins by around, 4 to 7 points, right around there. And we kind of get out of there, escape with a win, and keep it moving.
Yeah, I think it's one of those where maybe they're up like 28-14 or something, and UNC gets a late touchdown and make it a little bit closer. So I like 28-21, something like that. I know it's a risky score line, not picking any field goals or anything like that, but that's where I'm going to be right now. Real quick, we got through the football part of it, but hoop season is right on the horizon here. It's like less than 2 weeks away. Early impressions, are you excited for the Ryan Odom era?
I am, yeah, for sure. I know that they had the scrimmage against Vanderbilt, which again, I tweeted this out too. I put zero stock into these scrimmages that nobody gets to watch and all
Had they
that.
won, though.
Had they won, we would be winning the national title. But I know we beat UConn like 2 years ago in a preseason scrimmage, and they went on to like be the best college basketball team to ever exist. So these preseason scrimmages mean absolutely nothing to me, except unless we win, of course. But yeah, super excited. I think Ryan Odom, I watched like the mic'd up practice sessions that they have. Like he seems to be sort of a breath of fresh air for a program that may have been kind of sputtering towards the end of Bennett's tenure. As much as I love Tony Bennett, obviously, and everything that he did. But yeah, I think it's a new era. I think maybe we'll start scoring a lot of points, which would be kind of cool. I will be like super excited for that if that's the case. But yeah, it seems like it's a, some new life, some fresh air in the building, and it should be a fun year.
Yeah, we're gonna get we're gonna get to actually see them, not just listen on the radio, this Friday night against Villanova for that scrimmage. So that'll be interesting just to see these guys in person for the first time. I think
Again, unless we win, doesn't matter. Those
it
don't
doesn't
matter at
matter.
all.
Yeah, sure,
Unless
absolutely.
they win, of course, and then we're back. But unless if they lose, then the scrimmage doesn't matter, and who cares?
Yeah, the first one that matters is November 3rd against Rider in the debut of the Ryan Odom era. But that's coming up right around the corner. Excited to see them, and it's kind of weird though because normally at this point Virginia fans would be totally moved on from football season, and no one's ready to let this go. No one's ready to let
No,
this go
it's the
yet.
best ride of my life. I'm having the best time.
I gotta ask, just what is it like for you personally in your life right now? Just kind of all the people that you get to be around, and just I love the way that Gruden says your name, Malisek, and just what's that ride been like for you this last year?
It's been crazy. I mean, it's definitely been because when I came on the show last time, like I was still doing kind of the job I was doing, and in the Chicago office and in with Barstool, and it was kind of I was one of the guys that was hanging around, and working with Gruden's definitely changed my life in more ways than I could possibly explain. But it's kind of one of those things where it's the kid that maybe transferred schools or like graduated or whatever it is, and then gets to come back every once in a while and visit. Like that's how I feel now going back to the office in Chicago, especially now that UVA football is what it is. So I get to walk in there and go talk to Titus and Tate and the guys that have like good football teams and kind of shake their hand and say, hey, look at us playoff teams just all hanging out. Like we're all at the table together. making the college football playoff. How cool is that? So it's been super fun. Gruden's awesome, and we're having a good time. But yeah, my life's been on the up and up since I moved down here to Tampa, and I expect it to continue that way, especially with UVA football being what it is.
I was gonna say you can't help but smile right now with Virginia 6-1 on the season right now. Jake,
Awesome.
it's been too long. Let's not make it another year. Hopefully Virginia gets this win against UNC. We won't have to make it another year.
Exactly. If they do lose this Saturday, though, you should probably never have me on again.
That's true, especially not before or after UNC or anywhere around that game.
Nothing UNC related ever again with me on this show.
All right, we'll see if we get the Jake Malisek revenge this weekend. Jake, thanks for coming on. That'll do for the Who's On podcast for this week. We will be back with a post-game report after the UNC game. We'll also have some updates about the Villanova scrimmage on Friday as well. And you can, for the in meantime, catch everything on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, our new YouTube channel, the Who's On podcast. And we will see you next week. We're going to recap football, but we also got some big stuff planned for the start of basketball season just around the corner. So stay tuned until then.